This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, November 20th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring arts and entertainment and the area's largest venues, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com to register for daily business e-news.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the Northwest Arkansas Health Center has seen the number of patient visits increase more than fivefold since 2000. Soon, the staff and volunteers will be in a new, larger home. Plus, a quiet alternative to the retail madness of the season's busiest shopping weekend, Devil's Den has hikes, not sales.
But first, Arkansas schools will now be governed by rankings that compare each school against its own progress, as opposed to the progress of other schools in the state. The Arkansas Department of Education yesterday announced a new 5-level ranking system, which focuses on where students' ability is now and requires improvements from current levels. The State Commissioner of Education, Tom Kimbrell, says the system is an improvement over the first No Child Left Behind ranking system and focuses on incremental improvement.
I can continue to see improvement for students, I can see improvement for schools, and I see improvement for districts. So what it does is it takes the place of this unachievable goal and gives you a goal that is achievable yet maintains a standard of continued improvement for all students.
The new assessments look at student achievement, growth, and for high schools, graduation rate. The system focuses on proficiency in literacy and math. In addition to the new assessment system, the Department of Education released school rankings for the new system. For a link to the department's school rankings to see how local schools were rated, visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
A system of regional wayfinding signs could soon be a reality in Northwest Arkansas. The Northwest Arkansas Council, along with the Northwest Arkansas Planning Commission, has been working on a proposed system of signs that would point locals and visitors to points of interest in the major towns and cities in Benton and Washington counties. While the Springdale City Council is expected to take the issue up at its next meeting a week from today, Mike Malone, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Council, says that the idea for the program is not new.
I think it was back in probably 2008 or 2009. Bentonville started talking about doing a city wayfinding signage program. And around the same time, the University of Arkansas was considering a system of signage to get people to campus and around campus once they were there. Both Bentonville Convention Visitor Bureau folks and the University of Arkansas, when they had the idea, they offered it up to other communities and said, we'd love to see a regional signage program.
Because of the growth of cities in Benton and Washington counties, Malone says projects such as the regional wayfinding program are easier if planned at the regional level rather than being left up to individual city and county governments. But Malone says aside from making it easier to find area points of interest, the signs could offer another benefit for the region.
It will project the image to visitors and to business folks that come to town that this is one great region where things are coordinated and connected between the various jurisdictions. So a unified look, a unified system of signage to the key regional destinations, I think is going to go a long way to projecting an image of one great region.
Although the shape of the signs will be similar throughout the region, signs for each city will feature their own colors and graphics to showcase the uniqueness of each community. Malone says the program will be paid for through a public-private partnership similar to the funding model of the Razorback Regional Greenway.
When the Rogers School Board meets tonight, it will discuss a proposed change in the way the district credits students for high school-level classes taken in middle school or junior high. Phil Eichstadt is the district's director of secondary curriculum and instruction. He says until earlier this year, courses taken before high school were not documented on a student's transcript.
We realized that we should be putting this on the transcript. We had some conversations with the Department of Education. And so what we did is we went ahead and changed our policy so that any high school courses taken in middle school, that the grades would go on the transcript, the course would go on the transcript, and then also the grade would count in the GPA calculation. Because the students that originally took these courses were not thinking about this having an impact on their GPA, a lot of parents questioned that.
Eichstadt says the district then asked for more clarification from the state's Board of Education.
They went to their counsel, who researched the law a little bit more and came back to us and said that we did have to put the grades on the transcript along with the course, but we did not have to count it in GPA. What we had done earlier is changed our policy so that these grades would count in GPA. What we're doing now, and this will go to the board, we're asking them to change the policy so that the courses will be on the transcript, the grade will be on the transcript, but it will not count in GPA.
The courses would not count toward a student's grade point average on his or her transcript. Eichstadt also says the change would not affect students as they apply for scholarships, as those students should still have a full 4 years of grades for scholarship officials to review. He says the recommended policy change would exclude classes taken in middle school and junior high from GPA calculations because those classes were taken before students are in high school.
Flags in Arkansas will be flown at half-mast tomorrow in honor of an Arkansas service member killed in action. According to Governor Mike Beebe spokesperson Matt DeCampbell, Arkansas flags will be flown low to honor Specialist Joseph A. Richardson of Boonville. Richardson died Friday in Afghanistan after being injured by an enemy attack using an improvised explosive device and small arms fire. Richardson was 23 years old.
A Northwest Arkansas Community College student died Sunday after contracting a meningococcal infection. According to a press release issued by the college yesterday, school officials are identifying and contacting individuals who might have come into close contact with the student. College officials are disinfecting high traffic areas and other areas that were known to have been visited by the student. A meningitis infection manifests as flu-like symptoms, which can include fever, intense headache, irritability, listlessness, vomiting, and rash. The college urges all students, faculty, and staff members to take precautionary measures and to seek medical attention if they are experiencing any symptoms of infection.
Drivers in Springdale should be aware that Hilton Road is now closed between the intersections of Don Tyson Parkway and Julio Road. According to the city, the closure is necessary to allow for construction of a box culvert bridge. The section of Hilton Road is expected to be closed until the project is complete sometime in mid-December.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for clear conditions with a low of about 43 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Expect partly cloudy skies with fog overnight and a low of 36 degrees in northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow, expect partly cloudy conditions with early fog in northwest Arkansas, but clear in the Arkansas River Valley and a low in the lower 70s. And tomorrow night, expect partly cloudy conditions with a low of 43 in northwest Arkansas and a low of 48 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Since 1986, the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center has provided no-cost health services to uninsured and working poor adults in the area. For the past 24 of those years, the center has been in the Armory Building next to the old Washington County Courthouse. That space has been adapted over the past quarter century to accommodate more clients and more professional volunteers. But the need for such services continues to grow with the region's population, and soon the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center will be in a new, larger, freshly remodeled home.
We're basically the safety net. People have no other way to go, and we try to help in many areas. We try to be as comprehensive as possible.
Monica Fisher-Massey is the executive director of the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center. She's been at the center for 11 years, and during her tenure, the center has expanded its hours of service from being open 2 days a week to its current 5 days and one evening per week schedule. There are more professional volunteers, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and dentists than ever before, about 75. But still, the need for medical service outstrips the capacity of the current center.
If somebody asks me how we're doing, I always say our business is booming. We never lack for patients.
In 2000, the center had 2,000 patient visits. Last year, that number was 11,500 visits. Many of the clients not only have opportunities to see medical and dental personnel they wouldn't otherwise have access to, but they can take advantage of classes for such specific topics as diabetes or nutritional cooking. The Armory, where the center has been since 1988, has about 6,000 square feet. The new location will provide about 10,000 square feet.
And that's why we are moving to expand our services. We will be open more hours, plus we will nearly double the number of rooms that we have.
Last week, John Moores, the center's director of development, opened a side door to enter what will soon be the new Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center.
Main entrance will be here. When you first come in, the registration and reception area will be here, with a little seating area here for folks waiting to go to the reception desk. And that's the pharmacy. Another little waiting area here so people can wait while their prescriptions are getting ready.
The new center isn't far from the current downtown location. The building was most recently the Washington Regional Center for Exercise, a gym that had an open floor plan to accommodate weight machines, rowing machines, and treadmills. Now there are walls in that space that define waiting rooms, examination rooms, and offices. Those new facilities can handle more clients and make room for more volunteers. There will be twice as many medical examination rooms and twice the number of dental exam rooms. But John Moores acknowledges that means more expenses in the future, and he's been asked about sustaining the center.
We say all we can tell you is that we've been here for 26 years in this community. We've grown, but each year that we've grown and had an increased need for support, the community has always been there. So can I guarantee the future? No, but can I predict, I hope confidently, on the past 26 years of history is, yes, what we need. The community has been there for us, and we expect that to continue.
John Moore says the project's architect, Marlon Blackwell, has set a comfortable tone that should place clients and volunteers alike in a calm state. The new spot will increase the free parking for patients from about a half dozen spaces at the current location to about 70. The new center is easily accessible to a bus stop at the adjacent Veterans Administration campus. Also adjacent to the new location is the Northwest Arkansas campus of the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, a facility that can potentially provide more volunteers like medical and pharmaceutical students. The move to a new location needed many things to become reality, including volunteers. Volunteers, both medical professionals and laypeople, are so important because, remarkably, the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center operates with 2 full-time and 8 part-time employees. As the population has boomed in Northwest Arkansas in the 26 years of the health center's existence, the need for the center's services has grown, too. John Moore says depending on the research you use, the number of uninsured adults in Benton and Washington counties is placed between 40 and 50,000 men and women.
One of our services, in addition to providing the medical and dental, meeting those needs of our patients, we have what's called a patient advocate position. And that position has 2 primary responsibilities. One is to find referrals to specialists for things that we can't treat here. If somebody needs a service or a specialty treatment like surgery or some other health care that we can't provide to our volunteers, then that's what she does. She finds the referrals. The other thing she does is to find medications for the patients who can't afford them. And I think we've all seen the commercials on TV that say, if you can't afford this medication, please call this number. Well, that's a patient assistance program to help people with their drugs that are really expensive. In 2011, we provided 5 drugs to patients that if they were have to be purchased in the local drugstore would have cost over $350,000 just for those 5 medications for those patients who needed those medications in 2011. So it's just amazing what goes on sort of behind the scenes. People know that we provide medical care and dental care, but those kind of services tend to fly under the radar. But without those kinds of those results from our patient advocates' efforts, boy, it's just amazing.
The construction phase of the new center is expected to be completed sometime next month. The plan is to be able to stage the complicated move of the files, equipment, and furniture in 1 weekend. Close the doors on Friday evening. Be ready to see patients the following Monday. For Monica Fisher-Massey, the executive director at the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center, this pending move is helping a dream come true. She says it's a dream that's reinforced every day she's worked at the center for the past 11 years.
When I come to work and patients come in, I walk through the lobby and I see such a great need, and that reminds me of what my needs and what my wants are. What I have wants, not needs. The basic needs are filled. Those of our patients are not.
You can learn more about the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center at nwafreehealthcenter.org.
For many, the traditional Thanksgiving meal seems to mark the official ushering in of the holiday season. After the calm of indulging in a home-cooked meal and relaxing in front of the television on Thursday, comes the rush of shoppers descending on stores in droves in search of the best sales. Should you be looking for a less populated place to spend your weekend, you may want to consider Devil's Den State Park. Park interpreter Rebecca Penny says Devil's Den will host the inaugural CCC Geocaching Challenge Saturday morning.
Geocaching's a way to use technology to go on a treasure hunt. People are using GPS units and a lot of smartphones have the capabilities of plugging in coordinates to go find what are called caches, where people have hidden boxes, or sometimes they're micro caches. It can be very small containers where you go to look, hunt for these small treasures. Usually you just log in and get bragging rights for finding it. Sometimes you can leave something and take something out of the box. Sometimes there are challenges associated with them where you might have someone electronically take your picture from another spot. I mean, they can get very involved. But for the most part, it's just about getting out and finding the cache.
Participants must bring their own GPS unit or use an app on their smartphone to participate. And there are different levels of challenges to accommodate experienced as well as less experienced explorers.
We have two levels of challenges. One level's a little easier so that you wouldn't have to have as much experience with finding the caches. Some of the caches are micro caches, so they're a little bit more challenging to find. They'll be hidden a little harder. And some of the terrain is a little tougher on the more difficult challenge. If you've never GPSed or geocached before, you at least need some knowledge of how to use a GPS or plot coordinates. However, you could still do it if you'd never been on a geocache challenge before, as long as you know how to use a GPS. And we could help you along with that. It's a good way to get introduced.
Rebecca says they are always looking for new ways to get people to come out and explore the park, and this particular event will help educate visitors about the legacy of the Civilian Conservation Corps at the park.
Devil's Den State Park's lucky to be one of the most intact Civilian Conservation Corps created parks in Arkansas and possibly even the nation. The Civilian Conservation Corps was part of President Roosevelt's New Deal program to get the economy going again after the Great Depression. And although Arkansas State Parks owned the land as early as the 1920s, there was no access to the park, and there was really no facilities down here. And it wasn't until the creation of the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, that this really got opened up to the community. The CCC boys built the first road into the park, of which you can still see the old culverts. They built the visitor center that we're in now, all of our cabins, the store and cafe, the beautiful dam by Lake Devil that many people have seen postcards or pictures of and come looking for here on the park. And their hard work is illustrated all over the park. Their craftsmanship, the way that they use natural materials to try to blend in the buildings with the environment without marring it with something that didn't match the natural environment. So we're very proud of the hard work of the CCC boys, and we feel that by coming to Devil's Den State Park and exploring the trails that they built and the facilities that they built, you can almost walk in the footsteps of the Civilian Conservation Corps here.
Rebecca adds that geocaching is a fun way to involve a new generation of visitors by tying in technology with the history of the park.
Geocaching is actually addictive. Once you get into it, you realize that there are caches hidden all over the world, and all over Devil's Den State Park, all over Northwest Arkansas. So it's just a fun way to get out and explore and learn a little bit more about your park.
Registration is open from 9 to 10 Saturday morning at Devil's Den State Park. The registration fee is $20 per group, and it does include a t-shirt, but additional shirts may also be purchased. Those who are able to complete the challenge will be entered into a drawing for a two-night camping stay at any Arkansas State Park. More information is available at arkansasstateparks.com/devilsden.
This is Ozarks at Large. At the annual Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality Gala last weekend, Pride at Walmart came out of the closet. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, leaders of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered corporate resource group, in existence for 8 years, spoke on the record for the first time.
Several hundred people arrayed in sparkly gowns and black tie turned out for the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality Ball at the Inn at Carnell Hall in Fayetteville Friday night to honor several community partners.
For Walmart Pride. Big round of applause.
The top award went to Pride at Walmart, the retailer's 600-member lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered corporate resource group. On hand were several dozen gay Walmart executives and managers, including Greg Warren, vice president of creative marketing. In his acceptance speech, he chose to cite the late company founder, Sam Walton.
And his quote is, "I've always been driven to buck the system, to innovate, to take things beyond where they've been."
Bucking the system inside Walmart and other major corporations back in Sam's day, however, could place gay employees at risk. But things began to change at Walmart in 2003 after it set diversity goals and expanded its workplace non-discrimination policy to include sexual orientation. 2 years later, it established cultural and ethnic resource groups at the home office to enhance professional development and to foster a sense of community. Along with African American, Asian American, and women resource groups, quietly emerged Pride at Walmart. Co-chair Bruce Gillespie, senior product development director, says he's been out at Walmart since 1988.
I haven't experienced a lot of the angst or drama or turmoil that others have questioning, can I be out at Walmart?
Even Walmart experienced turmoil in its first attempt to connect with gay-owned suppliers when the company partnered with the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce in 2007. The Conservative Christian American Family Association staged a nationwide Black Friday picket, accusing the retailer of yielding to a radical homosexual agenda. Walmart quickly reacted by issuing a statement saying it would no longer contribute to, quote, highly controversial issues or give preference to gay or lesbian suppliers. But by 2010, the company started to get flack from gay civil rights groups, including the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, as well as the Human Rights Campaign, both calling for a general boycott. A year later, Walmart discreetly extended its non-discrimination policy to include gender expression and gender identity, recognizing transsexuals and transgendered associates. Most recently, it listed intersexed individuals and launched an Allies for Inclusion program. Dina Fidas is deputy director of the Workplace Project at the Human Rights Campaign, based in Washington, D.C.
You know, we applaud Walmart for implementing these basic workplace protections for their LGBT employees. For a lot of businesses, the next step is to move towards parity or equality across their suite of benefits.
To its credit, Walmart does convey benefits in states where same-sex marriage and domestic partnerships are legal. But Dina Fidas says it's not enough.
Gay and lesbian employees should not have to go through an undue legal burden of potentially traveling to another state to acquire a marriage license that really isn't relevant in their home state simply to access same-sex partner benefits. And, you know, a business that does not offer across-the-board same-sex partner benefits is, in fact, out of the mainstream. At this point in time, as a point of comparison, you know, 62% of the Fortune 500 offer healthcare benefits for same-sex partners.
And although 70 major corporations and firms, including Google, General Mills, and Microsoft, have gone on record in support of marriage equality, Walmart has not. Still, Walmart Pride counts 600 LGBT members among its 5,000 home office staff. But more important, Pride co-chair Bruce Gillespie says, the group has started to reach out to LGBT associates at large via Walmart One, the company's internal social network.
And there's a number of LGBT communication threads out there where on a regular basis they share their experience. And overwhelmingly, those are positive, and it talks of, you know, you have the similar experiences of those associates in the stores that I've experienced at the home office.
Pride at Walmart is also circulating an internally produced documentary featuring gay and lesbian executives, which publicly premiered at the Equality Gala.
I was born this way. I'd known since I was little.
And I had just come to this realization
that I was gay.
I'm a lesbian.
That I was a homosexual.
And started coming to realize, you know, I was 25, really needed to come out to my mother and my family at this point.
Hey, I need to talk to you.
It wasn't easy.
By telling her this was my worry.
I locked myself in the dorm room.
I was queasy. I was nauseous.
I was actually just
Walmart Pride co-chair Jason Vider, senior manager in Walmart's IT department, says the group has increased its visibility outside the home office by sponsoring regional LGBT events.
Yes, we do. We actually, once a year, first week in November, we do a celebration community event which celebrates diversity and inclusion in Northwest Arkansas. It talks about how do we make this place a better, or make Northwest Arkansas a better place to work, live, and raise a family.
And associates will find a tolerant climate at Walmart, says Sharon Orlop, Chief Diversity Officer.
I do think things have progressed quite a bit. I think the whole piece is around talent. We want to make sure we have the absolute best talent at Walmart. And so making sure that associates feel comfortable and inclusive at work and making sure that associates can bring their authentic self to work is what I think has driven the progression around the dialogue.
Through its Diversity Goals program, 36% of Walmart's 1.4 million U.S. associates are minority. 57% are women. But the company's not broken out statistics for its LGBT workforce, nor does it tease out LGBT vendors from its list of 3,000 minority and women-owned suppliers. But other retailers have also struggled with implementing both internal and external LGBT policies. Target, one of the most progressive, reportedly got into hot water last year after the Minneapolis-based company endorsed anti-gay politicians and campaigns. This summer, it released a same-sex wedding registry ad that proclaimed, "Be yourself together." Every year, the Human Rights Campaign Fund issues a corporate equality scorecard, with 100 being the highest mark. Again, Dina Fidas.
Walmart has a score of a 60 on the 2013 Corporate Equality Index. So a solid score, obviously not the highest score. You know, this year we had over 250 major businesses score a 100% on the CEI, including many major Fortune 500, Fortune 100, and Fortune 20 businesses. So I would say that Walmart has laid a solid foundation for LGBT equality. The difference between that 60 and a 100% on our national scorecard lies primarily in the benefits categories, also in the robust internal diversity and inclusion efforts, so robust training programs and the like.
Plus, Dina Fidas said Arkansas is among two dozen states where workers can still be legally denied work or fired for their sexual orientation. That's why Jason Rogers, spokesperson for the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, which hosted the gala, says Walmart needs to progress.
A resource group is a great way to start, but we are looking towards full equality and not just a resource group. We're looking for providing benefits to a lesbian couple who their partner has cancer and they can't provide aid to them because Walmart doesn't recognize them as a legal couple, and they provide their insurance for them. And Walmart's still lagging, and I still think that Walmart needs to push.
One way Walmart Pride members push is by wearing a special lapel pin, the iconic yellow spark set over a rainbow, the universal logo for gay rights. Again, gay rights activist Jason Rogers.
I applaud them for the pin. It's a good show for an image for them to wear on their lapels. At the same time, that does not guarantee them protection.
The company, famous for targeting local community product preferences, is finally testing the behemoth spending power of the 16 million strong LGBT market, estimated at $743 billion. It's custom stocked a Walmart Express in Wrigleyville, a gay district on Chicago's North Side. And for gay Walmart executive Greg Warren, that's a sign of things to come.
The core value of saving people money so they can live better is the reason that all of us, whether gay, straight, whatever, believe in this place. And I think it is a powerful pulling environment. It's a powerful environment in which we work. And that's the reason I came here. That's the reason a lot of my colleagues came here. We had choices. And we come here because this place means something to the greater good.
Or, as gala host Jason Rogers suggested,
I think that Walmart might need to change their slogan from save money, live better, and be fabulous. I don't know.
That might be a good slogan. How about y'all? Y'all think so? Save money, live better, and be fabulous. I think that's the next slogan. There we go.
One way to launch that campaign might be to sell those rainbow pins at checkout. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Tuesday, November 20th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grahana.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Lots of fun tonight. A little quiet yesterday. We're back today.
Oh, well, good.
It is Adventure Day at 4 o'clock at the Springdale Public Library. You should come as an explorer, a cowboy, an astronaut, a ship captain, or a pirate, and enjoy stories, songs, and a make-and-take craft.
It's like a lot of fun, actually.
Doesn't it? Yeah. I think we're going to start sneaking into these.
Telling you.
At 6 o'clock, you can go to the Fayetteville Public Library and see Up Among the Hills.
I guess they had the gala, the premiere, and then the free showing since have just been very well attended, and people keep coming.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, so I really must get that done. At 6:30, there's a lighting ceremony in front of Stubblefield Center at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith. Not only will they turn on the lights, but they'll give you hot cocoa and apple cider.
I went a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and this was a really great event.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was town and gown, everyone there together. The night I went, it was not too cold, mm-hmm. but just cold enough for the hot chocolate to... Mm-hmm. It's a good time.
It's the perfect time. Mm-hmm. And a heads up for tomorrow. The School's Out Movie Fest at the Springdale Public Library. Movies at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. You need to pick up a free ticket at the children's desk.
Do we know what the movies are?
No, we don't.
Okay.
So go find out. All right. Let me know.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the day's news. We interview actors, musicians, and artists of all stripes and take the time to understand what really drives them. We learn the story behind the story to get at the deeper truths that connect us all. I'm Melissa Block. Stop by for your daily dose of discovery every afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 3 until 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The trails in Bentonville have opened alternative ways to navigate across the city, and there is an ambitious program designed to make sure some of the youngest Bentonville residents can take advantage of the biking possibilities now available. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has this report.
Well, we were able to buy 540 bikes, 30 for each school, a classroom set for each school, and we'll start with every elementary. And third and fourth grade will have it, and they will ride a committed amount of 40 hours of biking a year at least, or they could do more. And then the middle school will also have it and have larger bikes for those kids. And they also have to learn bike safety. That would be part of the program, bike etiquette, trail etiquette, and about the trails. We even wrote our own manual, and the Bentonville Parks Department helped us with the manual. And then so did the Ozark Bike Coalition helped us. It has all the new Razorback Greenway trails, and they have maps of each trail, and they have pictures of the art for Crystal Bridges Trail, and they learn about the different trails and how to ride to school more so their parents have to drive less. And anyway, they'll learn the right-hand signals and how to stop, and how to look, how to pass. And then junior high will also have a set of bikes. And then the new junior high will even have a set of bikes. And then the high school will have it through their intramural program so that there'll be mountain biking for girls and mountain biking for boys. There'll be co-ed mountain biking. So those will be intramural things that we're offering for our large high school.
Where did the idea for this program come from?
Well, kind of me. I like bikes and, you know, when you do a lot of research on Arkansas, American League of Bicyclists ranked us the 50th least friendly bike state, and that bothered me. And the rankings of obesity bother me. And then we have a wonderful school foundation here who had given a set of bikes already to Lincoln Junior High, and we've seen the kids ride them every day and just loving it and feeling great about it. And then my husband just retired from working for the International Olympics in the sport of triathlon, and he is now the outreach director for Bike Bentonville. So he's into the bikes, and with all the new trails here in Bentonville and the Razorback Greenway, it just makes sense to use the trails as an outside classroom.
So this is kind of a personal mission for you then?
Well, sort of. I'm an avid cyclist myself and runner and triathlete type person, and it just meant a lot to me in my life, and it's non-generational. You know, we have the bikes here in a warehouse now, and we're putting them together on the weekends with lots of volunteer help and Fat Tire mechanics, because the bikes came from Fat Tire. They're Trek bikes. They're really nice bikes, aluminum frames with disc wheels. They're really fine quality, and
We've had people from the Bella Vista Bicycling Club, and many seniors have come in and helped put hours of putting the bikes together with the mechanics and helping us get them all for this kickoff that we're having on December 3rd in our athletic complex.
You mentioned this program is eventually going to be for students from elementary school through junior high.
Right, and then with our high school being so large, it was hard to incorporate it and saturate the PE department with it. And we have a collegiate level intramural program with an intramural coordinator that we started a year ago, so it fits in really better with our intramural program in the high school.
But even through elementary through junior high, it seems like that's a lot of bikes to get. Has the school district had partners in getting this
equipment?
Oh, yes.
We got a Walton Family Foundation grant, and then we had a percentage of matching funds that were from Coca-Cola. And then our Bentonville Schools Foundation helped. And then Walmart Visitor Center helped. So all those financial streams combined gave us enough financial support. And then Fat Tire Bike also worked with Trek to get a huge discount on the bikes and to get them where they were more affordable. And then we even found out that the Trek corporate office is sending their own national PR people to come to our event. So we're real excited.
Now, you've mentioned this event a couple times. What exactly is going to be happening at this December 3rd kickoff event?
Well, it's going to be fun because, you know, the athletic complex is an indoor football field. So we're going to put all 540 bikes on the field, and we're going to have 30 students from each school stand by the bikes with the principals and the PE teacher and have one big group picture of because so far in the research I've done, and I could be wrong and just missed it, I know that some of our neighboring districts do some biking in the schools, but I haven't found one district that has saturated it in every school and actually made it a real curriculum piece where there's different safety rules and things that are taught. And we had a historian from Rogers Historical Museum actually figured out the history of each trail. Like a slaughter pen used to be a pig slaughtering house, and Mobley Trail was from the apple orchards of the Mobley Farm. And so we're even going to teach history while they're on the bike. So anyway, but back to the event. Sorry, I get so excited. I talk about the whole gamut. But all the people that help support it, Coca-Cola and different companies will come and celebrate watching the kids, and we'll have photo ops with our board and the board foundation, and then the kids are going to ride their bikes back to the school, so that'd be a lot of fun.
Getting the bikes is one thing, but maintaining them is another entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we worked that out too. So we have a gateway program where students that find the high school conformity challenging, and through the Arkansas Career Education Department, we started a entrepreneur bike shop program. So we actually have a bike shop in our high school, and 15 of the students there are getting to be trained bike mechanics, so they will actually maintain the fleet through that course.
This program is starting with 540 bikes. How large are you expecting this program to get?
Probably not a lot larger. This will actually give Lincoln Junior High 90 bikes, and they don't care. They'll find space if they have to. They believe in it that much. But, you know, we have a space issue here because of our growth. So we would even have more bikes if we could, but it's a space issue with us right now. I think we'll just be, you know, rotating them through all the PE classes.
So would you say the whole idea of this program is to try to get kids engaged into riding bikes?
Absolutely, and to get them comfortable with the trails and know how they can use the trails to go to school more, so parents won't have to drive them to school so often, because many of our trails hook right up to our schools. Because our trails are used a lot now, we want them to be safe on the trails when they pass people and help, you know, with the etiquette piece and to respect our trails. And our trails are so rich in learning opportunities, we want to give them that outdoor classroom as a fun alternative to learning.
All right, Mary, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you for calling, and we appreciate it.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later this week, it's Black Thursday, the Super Bowl of shopping, the Retail World Series. Wayne Bell, who writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com, knows a thing or two about Black Friday. Welcome back.
I like that you inadvertently in the opening called it Black Thursday, because
that's what
it's come to.
Did I really say that? Okay.
For the rest of people, it's called Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But for retail, it's Black Friday and now Black Thursday.
If I'm correct, you kind of have a love-hate relationship with this phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, I come in here every year and we talk about this, and then Kyle kind of goes, what? People do that?
Are you going to shock me again this year with the...
Yeah, with the stories? No, they do that. And I have always liked it. I have memories of getting up with my sister at, you know, 3 a.m. and going to Target and watching the crazy. Because we always just kind of stand back and let all the crazy go first, and then we go. Because I don't need a you know, an off-brand TV. But this year, it's a little spoiled because a number of retailers, starting last year, Target, Walmart, a lot of others,
Macy's, was one of the ones that...
they open at midnight.
Right.
This year, they're opening at 7 or 8 p.m. on Thursday. And that, for some reason, you know, you'd think that that would excite me, I guess, because it would be more comfortable. You could just go shopping at night. But there's something about the notion of those employees getting there at 4 or 5 on a Thanksgiving day that really drives me crazy.
Which means if you traditionally sit down with friends and family at 2, you're rushed.
I have a real problem with that, and I think that I've seen Walmart's got a lot of kickback from that from around the country, and I don't know. I have an issue with that. I can't imagine they make just so much extra money by opening. And what does that mean for next year?
Well, I was going to say, isn't this an escalating arms race that, okay, if my big box competitor is going at 8, mm-hmm. and so therefore I'm not seeing nearly the foot traffic at midnight, maybe I open at 6 next year? I mean, when will
this? Right, or don't even close. Yeah. And that's the unfortunate part now, is that from a marketing standpoint, these stores have seen Thanksgiving, instead of looking at it as a holiday to celebrate and give back and thanks, and it's a kickoff to the season, which has started earlier and earlier, because even the first 2 weeks of October, I saw them putting Christmas stuff out at Target.
Mm-hmm. So this Black Thursday...
Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah. This, we've had this conversation in years past, but could I go in, if I so designed to go into a retailer at 8 or 9 Thanksgiving night, am I going to find this amazing bargain? Is it really worth my time?
I always think it's worth it to see kind of the crazy people and kind of get, you know, I think what ends up happening is the people who go into those retailers end up going in for those items, but they just end up buying regular priced items because they just happen to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a good day for, you know, that. And that's what they use to draw them. I mean, if you look at those ads that come in the Thanksgiving Day paper, that Thursday paper,
right?
They'll say things like, we had this TV for, you know, $129, but then underneath it'll say 4 per store. So, you know, they know that there's not that many. It's a draw to get people in the door.
What is the big pull for me to not go to this store 4 or 5 days later or a week later?
I mean, if it's not something that you would normally do, or you're not somebody who's like excited to go, then you're not going to go.
Okay.
They know that. But if you are one of those people who really enjoys just kind of being in the crowd, you know, it's kind of like War Eagle in a way. It's not like you're going to go to War Eagle if you're not interested in going to War Eagle.
But
if you're a crafter, or you really love the crowds and you know, maybe I'm not even going to buy anything, but I just want to do it, then you're probably going to go anyway.
But here's the difference. If I'm not that interested in the wares at War Eagle, I might be interested in the food, or I just might like being outside because it's 72 degrees
right.
and blue sky. If I'm in the middle of Target or Best Buy at 9 at night on a holiday, I don't understand. But it's not directly
well, yeah,
at me.
I get that. And I also, I start to wonder, part of the thrill of Black Friday is getting there early in the morning and getting that item that everybody wanted and feeling like that sense of, you know, I got it in this world. And if you take away, part of that thrill is because it wasn't open on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. The anticipation, sort of?
And getting all your papers ready and getting your family together and coming up, and our family used to be coming up with a plan to, you know, branch out and make sure that you could get the stuff. If they take that away, well, it's just another shopping day.
Well, then is this phenomenon that has built up over a couple of decades?
They're going to bite themselves if they don't fix this. And then, of course, after Black Friday, we have Saturday, and then we have Cyber Monday, which is the big sales day. Then we have Small Business Saturday.
Right, which
then
I
we
like.
Have the big Saturdays before the holiday season, before Christmas, like every Saturday they build. And so, I mean, it's kind of an ongoing event.
And this year is the longest amount of time you can have between Thanksgiving and Christmas, because Thanksgiving is...
That's right. So why, if you're going to have an extra weekend of shopping space, they could make that up. Why have to open Thursday? You know, because you can go, well, you know, they're opening at 7 or 8 p.m. It's okay. But think those store employees probably have to get there at 5.
Right.
So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of gross. And I don't exactly know when I'll go.
So you will?
Yeah, we'll go, but maybe we'll go on Friday morning. Because, like I said, we never have kind of that. We don't need that big hot item, that cheaply made electronic item that they put out every year.
You can live without it for another
yeah,
little
the
while.
Special edition that, you know, doesn't have a volume button on it. You know, we don't need that this year.
Yeah, Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 20th of November, 2012. Microsoft Windows version 1 was released on this date, 1985. Bill Gates, Paul Allen had developed an operating system they called MS-DOS, which stood for Microsoft Disk Operating System. It shipped in IBM computers beginning in 1981, but it was not intuitive, and if you used it, you had to memorize a string of commands and get comfortable with the backslash key, something most people had never taken any notice of. So Microsoft designers began working on a more user-friendly operating system, and on this date in 1985, that Windows program was shipped. It's the birthday of the astronomer Edwin Powell Hubble, Marshfield, Missouri, 1889. He became a lawyer but gave up practicing law, decided to get a doctorate in astronomy instead, went to work at Mount Wilson Observatory in Pasadena, where he discovered there are other galaxies outside the Milky Way, and these distant galaxies are moving away from the Milky Way. In other words, the concept of the expanding universe, which has been called the most spectacular astronomical discovery of the 20th century. The Hubble telescope was named for him. And it's the birthday of the novelist Nadine Gordimer, born in Spring, South Africa, 1923. She grew up in a middle-class white community near a gold mine where all the black workers were forced to live in a windowless barracks guarded by police. Never thought about who those miners were or what their lives were like, until she read a novel by Upton Sinclair, The Jungle. She moved into Johannesburg and started writing short stories, watched as many of her black friends were put under surveillance, arrested for treason. Nadine Gordimer, one of the few white novelists of her generation who did not go into exile, started to write about the South African political resistance in a series of novels, including The Late Bourgeois World, The Guest of Honor, The Conservationist. And for 60 years, she contributed short stories to The New Yorker magazine. In the short story, she said, "Contact is more like the flash of fireflies, in and out, now here, now there, in darkness. Short story writers see by the light of the flash." Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, entitled Shackleton's Decision. At a certain point, he decided they could not afford the dogs. It was someone's job to take them one by one behind a pile of ice and shoot them. I try to imagine the Arctic night which descended and would not lift, a darkness that clung to their clothes. Some men objected because the dogs were warmth and love, reminders of their previous life where they slept in soft beds their bellies warm with supper. Dog tails were made of joy. Their bodies were wrapped in a fur of hope. I had to put the book down when I read about the dogs walking willingly into death, following orders, one clutching an old toy between his teeth. They trusted the men who led them into this white danger, this barren cold. My God, they pulled the sleds full of provisions and barked away the sea leopards. Someone was told to kill the dogs because supplies were running low, and the dogs gathered around the fire, their tongues wet with kindness, knew nothing of betrayal. They knew how to sit and come, how to please, how to bow their heads, how to stay. A poem by Faith Sharon Shackleton's Decision, from her collection Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Written by Joy Biles, produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Health.
Ha! Oh, Health. I've been there, I think.
Mm-hmm. We went there when we went on the hike for the waterfalls.
That's right.
It's in Madison County. It's like a little bit northwest of Mount Gaylor.
And it has a sign. There is still one of those green highway signs, I think, that tells you you're
there.
There
was a sign, yeah.
Right. Let's see. I want to once again thank Margaret Buchanan Selassie. She was our winner for the Billy Elliot tickets.
Yes.
And the Tim Ernst calendar and the movie tickets.
Yes.
And she emailed me back and mentioned that her, and remember the question was what state capital borders another country.
Right.
She emailed me back and her son actually lives in Juneau.
Alaska.
Right, which is the answer. And it's been her tradition to send him a Tim Ernst calendar.
Oh, how cool.
So.
Yay, universe.
Now she has one. We're going to give away more Tim Ernst calendars.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give away more movie tickets. And we've got two more Billy Elliot tickets.
Yes, another pair.
Overnight. Mm-hmm. Not today.
No.
Listen Friday. Listen the day after Thanksgiving. It's the Ozarks at Large Black Friday special. How's that?
Ooh, I like that. So I like the sound of that.
Okay. So we'll give them away and you'll have all weekend to get the answer. And this one's going to be tougher.
Okay.
Okay. So be listening.
Sounds good.
You have a good weekend?
I did. Birthday party. It was all day. I know.
That your standard
that's
answer?
My standard answer is birthday party. I have a lot of people with a lot of birthdays.
I guess you do.
I mean, you know, they were born, so it kind of happens.
Right. You just have a lot of friends, I guess.
I guess so.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah, it was good. It was a very good weekend. You?
Well,
obviously.
I spent some quality time with Bruce Springsteen
you
in Kansas
did,
City.
Or as Bruce, as you call him, because you guys are tight like that.
We were physically close at several stages during the show in Kansas City. There are some other people in Fayetteville who were there, and they know
Molly Ron, our membership director, went with your group.
Yes, but there was a stage in the middle of the Sprint Center this year, and so on three different occasions, you just look up and there he was. Great show.
I saw some pictures. It looked like a good time.
Yes, over a 3-hour show.
Wow,
just fantastic.
I feel old. I don't think I could stand that long.
Yeah. And he's performing.
I know.
And he's 62.
Oh, exactly. Right.
It's just a great time, and you're there with like-minded people. And, you know, he was in Denver last night. He's going to be in Portland, Vancouver, Mexico City. I'd love to see it again. But
well, Thanksgiving's coming up, and I guess I won't talk to you until after Thanksgiving.
Right.
You're going away.
To my family, Laura's family in Kentucky. Spent a couple days there.
That'll be
looking
good.
Forward to it.
That'll be good.
Yeah. Get some reading done, visit, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wait. I'll see you on Friday.
Well, as I'm saying, I won't see you till after Thanksgiving.
Got you.
So I wanted to ask you about it. I will ask you how it was.
Very good.
Later.
Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'll be here tomorrow with a special Thanksgiving Eve edition with David Shipler.
Yes.
Recorded at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Have a good day.